What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that knows that it's Steve Bruce's Football League and we're just living in it. Coming up, a sunken pitch, Errol gets the bullet and Andy Vyman remains unbitten. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. Well, hello there. Welcome along. Thanks for joining us for our weekly romp around everything Football League. We are here to talk through lots of stuff today. We're going to look ahead to the weekend's action. There's been some managerial movements, bit of cup football midweek too. So lots to get to. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I'm joined, as ever, by Adrian Clarke. How are you doing, Clarkey?
Hello. Yeah, very good. Enjoyed that intro. Well played.
Well, thanks. Appreciate that. Sam Parkin's back with us too. Do you want to shower me with a compliment, Sam?
I'm always very complimentary about your work, Matt. And I come to you today on the cusp of an unlikely Thursday morning hat trick. I've already smashed two items in my household. So let's hope I'm as consistent as we get going here. Nice bowl, mixing bowl, and a glass just as I was getting some H2O.
You just got to smash the podcast. Then you got the hat trick. There you go.
Like it. Or I'll go for a Moussaka post pod and smash a plate.
I smashed a milk bottle the other week and I reasoned to myself because it smashed into a million pieces, took ages to clean up. And I thought, well, look, the good thing is this is not one of my possessions. This is Fernley's Dairy who are suffering here long term, not me. And this isn't what you came for, is it, listener? I will get to football shortly. But first, do us a favour. Subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. Follow us on social media at EFL What The on X, What The EFL, everywhere else. And tell a pal, we would greatly appreciate it. We are also delighted to say that we've partnered up with Quinbet for another season, and to celebrate that, Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It's for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. You can check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and they run the National Gambling Helpline. I'll put the link to that and to the offer code in the description of this pod. Right, before we get into some news, inspired by Adrian Durham revealing his top 10 grounds he's been to, because he's just done the 92, Clarkey thought it might be nice for us to discuss our favourite and least favourite grounds. So we're going top two each. Now, I don't know about you two, but I've excluded the Premier League in this because it's a Football League podcast, and otherwise I'd just choose Forest and Chelsea. Clarkey would choose the Emirates. We know how this would go. Adrian, Football League-wise then, give me, let's start with your best. Give me your two best.
It is really hard. I love grounds, full stop. I'm a fan of a lot of stadiums. I don't want to copy Adrian Durham, but I do think he kind of nailed it with a few of his best ones. One that he didn't mention that I really like is West Bromwich Albion, actually. I like West Bromwich Albion. I love the view from the gantry there. I love the press room view, where it's got this glass window looking into the corner of the ground. And I do think it's a proper old stadium. It doesn't look any different to how it did probably 15, 20 years ago. And I do really like it. QPR and Leeds are two that he picked out, and I love them. But I'm going to chuck in the best of the new grounds. And I think it's Rotherham. I really like Rotherham. I don't know if you guys have been there, but as new grounds go, I think it's really well designed. The stands are really upright, so everyone's sort of over the pitch. It's got nice colour to it, and a good away end, plenty of sound. I think it, and it's not sort of identikit to other stadiums. So I'm going to chuck Rotherham into the mix.
All right, I like that. I went to Millmore and that was a dump, but I'm going for New York.
It really was.
All right, that's your two best then, West Brom and Rotherham. Sam, are you deviating from those?
I am. Well, the answer is QPR and Swindon, but allegiances aside, I do like West Brom. For me, it just reminds me of kind of stale 0-0, 1-0 results on Friday night.
Yeah.
So I, for that reason, I can't go for it. I mean, some of this is personal experience, obviously, the two that I'm going to give you. My little shortlist, just firstly, I love like the tradition of Norwich and Ipswich.
Yeah.
I think
Norwich
brilliant
great.
Grounds. Yeah. Both Sheffield grounds, I love playing at. That vast cop, obviously, at Hillsborough. Sheffield United, likewise. But my two, again, a little bit personal experience, atmosphere. My performances, certainly at the first one, would be Elland Road, definitely. Great atmosphere. Always enjoyed playing there. And Pompey was one of the best atmospheres. I could do without the bell, granted. And
his name's John, I think.
And the dressing rooms could do a little bit of TLC, albeit I haven't been there for a while. But in terms of an atmosphere and the fans on top of you, you get everything you get at QPR and more, I would suggest. So yeah, they would be the two that I'd plump for.
All right. Well, I did have Elland Road on my list as well for the atmosphere, but I'll take that off and I'll swap it. This is a bit rogue. I really like Burton Albion, the Pirelli. Again, for a relatively new one, I think it's quite well designed and they just treat you fabulously at Burton. It is sort of death-defying getting up to the gantry there, which I like as well. I don't know if you've done that. It's like just a straight staircase that you have to go up. And if you've got equipment, it's a bit taking your life in your own hands, but I enjoy that. My favourite, though, is Turf Moor. And I'll tell you for why. I'm sure you two have both been in the press area there. You go up, you've got that beautiful view of the rolling Lancashire hillside, and it is just absolutely stunning. It always brings to mind like a Hovis advert or something in my head. I've just got playing in my head. Sam, you like it too?
Keep going.
Yeah, it was one of those that's such a, it's peculiar in terms of the way it's built, you know, the way the tunnels used to be behind the goal, and that away stand, I don't know if I love it or I hate it. It's a bit similar to smaller scale, but Bristol Rovers, I think there's a cricket, old cricket pavilion in that
right
memorial
next door,
ground.
Yeah, the cricket grounds where the away sports park. Love the managers having to walk across the pitch as well. That's always
nice. I don't know if I love or hate that, but for the purposes of today, we'll give them both the benefit of the doubt. There's something about Turf Moor, definitely.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I played there. It was two old stands, two newish ones. Mm. They're not that new, are they? But you know what I mean. Yeah, it's higgledy-piggledy, but it's in it's in a beautiful area.
Worst, I'll kick us off, Reading. Sorry, guys. I know you got bigger problems in your stadium at the moment, but it's the fact that, especially as an away supporter, if you get the train to Reading, you've then got to get a bus to some soulless industrial estate. And it's one of those flat pack IKEA stadiums that came out in this sort of noughties, put it alongside Middlesbrough Derby, those kind of places that it just feel a little bit soulless to me. So I'll say Reading. Obviously, I've got Derby as well for the same reasons, but you know, it's in Derby. Adrian, what about you?
I've got a hat trick. This sort of says just a little bit, I don't know, a little bit nothing-y. Northampton, Oxford, and it's controversial. I don't like Millwall's ground. I don't like it. It looked tired when it was 5 years old. It looks even more tired now. I don't know. I know they make a lot of noise, but it doesn't often get sold out. There's always a lot of empty seats there.
Good luck on your next visit.
I've been there in years.
Clarky, get off at Canada Water and do the walk along the train line. Proper lower league football. Do that.
I played at the original den. I played at the original den in an FA Youth Cup tie for Arsenal. I think it was a semi-final. It was a big game. And they had about, I don't know, 5,000 there. I reckon there's 1,000 police for a youth game. It was filth. The way that they lambasted us as we went down the tunnel, us 16, 17, 18 year olds, was horrific looking back, but I kind of like the experience. But yeah, the new den is just not the best, is it?
All right, so let them all come down to the den, but not Adrian Clark. Sam, it was your old stomping ground, so I'm guessing it's not on your list. I think Oxford might have been, would be an estimate from me, but what did you go for?
No, very happy memories of the den, so much so that I sent my sister a video of them singing their anthem just before kickoff the other day, because it's, I think, one of two games she's ever been to and seen me playing, and it was my debut at Millwall, and she's always spoken about that that song. So I sent her a little video, so yeah, it's got a special place in my heart. I'm not gonna regale the Accrington Stanley story again for the 100th time on this podcast, but that's got to be in there for me for my last couple of experiences in professional football. I'm sure it's had a facelift now, and I've got a lot of time for the majority of what the chairman says and does, but that would have to be there. And the other one that hasn't been mentioned, and this again, I think it's that away stand. I've had some good experiences there, but I think quite hostile when it gets going. Again, I'm just not having these changing rooms in the corner. I'm going Gillingham. Sorry, Gills fans.
All right. Well, I think some of them would agree with you, given that picture that went viral of the chap whose season ticket was for a seat that had been taken out of the stadium at the start of the campaign. So some stuff to be done.
How's your luck?
At Priestfield, I think. Well, that was a nice little bit of fun, wasn't it? tell us your favourite, ground and least favourite at EFL What There Is, the place to get in touch with us on X. Next today, we're going to do some news. Little bit of managerial movement this week. Cardiff City have sacked Errol Bullett with the Bluebirds bottom of the Championship. They've only picked up 1 point from six league games. They've only scored one goal. It's their worst start to a season in 94 years. He was only given a new contract in June. Means the club are now looking to appoint a 12th permanent manager in the 14 years that Vincent Tan has owned the club. I rather imagined, Clarky, that there was a phone call this week that went like this. Hi, Neil. It's Vincent. Vincent Tan. Yeah, the guy who changed Cardiff shirts to red for a bit. Neil, you still there? Is he throwing up the Warnock bat signal? Is this a Stephen Schumacher thing? Mark Hughes amongst the favourites, I noticed.
Saw that. No, Sparky. I think Sparky's managerial days are probably done, aren't they? I mean, it didn't go brilliantly at Bradford.
So that's a bookie going, right, who's Welsh? Nathan Jones, Mark Hughes. Let's think then with it.
Well, Nathan's gone on record as saying he wouldn't ever turn it down because it's sort of his club. But with Charlton sort of on the up, he might want to turn it down if they did come knocking this time around. Schumacher's a good shout. I think if Tony Mowbray feels well enough and the indications are that he does, then it could be a job for him. I think it's a job for a strong character. You've got to deal with, obviously, Vincent Tan. And I think the sort of the footballing knowledge is a little bit low among the hierarchy at Cardiff. They don't have a sporting director. They sort of, you know, got a lot of loud voices, but not that much knowledge. And I think you need kind of a strong character to deal with these people behind the scenes there. So yeah, I would go with Mowbray or Schumacher, but sort of instinctively, if you were to put me on the spot. But yeah, it just didn't work with Bullet, did it? I mean, I didn't know a lot about him, but when he got the job, I had a little look this morning. His previous job, he had a 32% win ratio, not great. He ended up losing 30 of 58 games at Cardiff. It never really got going, did it? It would be interesting to see what happens. Omar Rica, who is the interim manager, not caretaker, I played with him at Arsenal. Lovely guy, really nice guy. He's been turning out for the Arsenal charity team, the sort of celeb ex-player team for donkey's years. He's a really good guy, and I'm pleased for him because I remember when he started out in coaching, he's worked his way up. He's had to do a lot of different jobs en route to where he is. So I wish him the best of luck during his interim spell in charge. But yeah, Cardiff, I think, needs an experienced manager.
They do a lot of experienced managers, don't they, Sam? You know, you think of like Neil Harris, who wasn't there very long. It feels to me like they've kind of tried everything. They've gone for the foreign manager. They've gone for the guy who knows the Football League. Maybe this is the time that Brian Barry Murphy comes back into the thinking, or are you going for steady Championship head like Clarkie?
I'm actually not. I agree with everything that Clarkie said, to be honest. I just think, and I wheeled this out on another podcast the other day, so apologies, but you know, like the short-term pain for long-term gain. You know, Cardiff were down in the fourth division, weren't they, 20 years ago, and obviously had a ridiculous ascendancy, and the potential is huge. We don't need to go into the logistics here, but, you know, glossy new stadium, obviously been in the Premier League, cup final, you know, it's a terrifically supported club. The potential is huge, but I think, as you say, Matt, they've just gone from different styles to another, different managers. I think invariably they're quite in your face, Cardiff. And I think that's how they've had success. And they've tried to change briefly. I think under Steve Morrison, his kind of blueprint was to try and play a little bit more expansively. And that lasted a matter of weeks. And they've just chopped and changed. Like, again, I think Bullet has tried to play more possession this season. I think that's absolutely been evident, weirdly, probably mostly in that game up at Burnley when they got absolutely smashed. So I think, given that they lost heavily the last two games of last season, and he's had the summer to integrate a lot of kind of eye-catching new signings, and none of them have done anything, I think the writing has to be on the wall there. But sorry, to go to my point, I'd just like to see someone with a concise plan, maybe with a little bit of a different idea over a longer period. I know we're talking about owners that historically haven't hung about, and it's a bit all over the place behind the scenes, but I just wrote down a few names. Schumacher's obviously there, but I thought that's a little bit of a gamble maybe. And then not people that would take the job necessarily or be offered it, but what about Ian Everett, someone like that at Bolton? It might be a bit of a jump. I mean, Sellers at Reading's not going to hang about, is he? too long if this continues. Someone like Richie Wellens, I think, deserves an opportunity in the Championship at some point. These are just a few names. I just think, you know, it's time now that Cardiff took a little bit of a gamble and stuck with it. But I probably don't envisage that happening, and maybe it will be someone to, now they're in a bit of a desperate situation, to safeguard their Championship status.
Elsewhere, Scott Lindsay's dropped down a division. He's left Crawley to go to MK Dons, as is the style of the time. He says, "I think it's clear to everyone just how much potential there is at MK Dons, and I'm thrilled to be joining to help achieve it." Clark, is he playing the long game here, or is he just had a decent pay rise?
I'm sure he would have got a pay rise, but look, he's the new regime's new man. So he's their guy. So that's a big lure for him. Obviously very ambitious, these new owners. I just think it's a great fit for the style of football that the MK Dons have always tried to play. And it'll work with the squad that was built by the previous manager, Mike Williamson. Obviously, I was there when Crawley absolutely destroyed MK Dons. So, you know, he's going to have a lot of respect instantly, I think, from MK Dons fans for what he did to their team at the end of last season. And he's got two of his best players from that team, hasn't he? Liam Kelly and Lawrence Maguire there in situ. I think Joe Tomlinson he worked with at Swindon as well. So there's some friendly faces. Apparently, he said, didn't he, this week, Scott Lindsay, that Liam Kelly had been texting him all week saying, "When you coming?" This was before he'd even got the gig. So I think it was pretty clear from the get-go that he was the one they wanted. I just think it works for all parties. For Crawley, unfortunately, there is a ceiling and he'd probably reached it. And I probably thought, well, how much higher can we go? If I drop back down, it's quite an exciting challenge, the prospect of a journey with MK. And MK's ceiling is absolutely higher than Crawley. So I get why he moved.
Rob Elliott is the early favourite, Sam, ex-Newcastle goalkeeper. Brian Barry Murphy's in for this one as well. They did the kind of inexperienced manager thing before, didn't we? And that didn't go so well. What about here? Are we thinking Crawley, you like to think outside the box, we'll go for something a bit left field? Or is this a kind of John Coleman, Pete Wilde, Gareth Ainsworth kind of gig?
No, I think they'll be scouring the local area, probably the non-league scene, and managers that are pulling up trees in the bottom division play a nice style of football to unearth the new Scott Lindsay. I think, you know, considering the way they sign players, you know, very data driven, that has to go hand in hand with who's going to be coaching the players, I would imagine. So yeah, someone probably that's doing the business already with quite a small budget. What about Dean Brennan, someone like that at Barnet? Friend of a friend. I know he's been in for many a job. Plays good stuff.
Loves his own fans, doesn't he, Dean Brennan? Did you see that video?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely tremendous.
He's tremendous, yeah. He's maybe have to just tailor that somewhat if he does get the opportunity in the EFL. But yeah, that's just one name of many, I'm sure. Obviously, the National League is not my forte, but that's where I'd be looking probably if I was predicting which way Crawley would go.
All right, well, we'll have to keep an eye on that one. In less good news, more than 100,000 litres of water has been pumped out of AFC Wimbledon's flooded Plough Lane after the area was trashed by the River Wandle breaking its banks. It meant the midweek cup tie with Newcastle was called off. That'll now be played at St James's Park next week. The weekend's game against Accrington has gone too because they couldn't find an alternative venue to stage it. A fundraiser set up by a supporter has done well. They're hoping to raise 100 grand. Newcastle have chipped in 15 grand to help that. Obviously, Sam, regular listeners will know that Johnny Jackson, Wimbledon manager, is your consigliere. He must be absolutely devastated by this because it's bang the wrong time for this to happen, isn't it? You know, if they hadn't picked up a win in a while, you might think, well, some valuable time on the training ground, but that's not the case.
No, it's a real blow when you consider we're sat here recording on Thursday. We could be sat here in the aftermath of a famous giant killing. Was the Newcastle game got postponed and changed to St James's Park next week? So that takes away some of the potential for a shock, you have to say. And yeah, doing terrifically well. I mean, defensively, they've been incredible start of the season, giving away very few chances. The structure of the team looks good. They've got a great chance. So Aki at home this weekend, you would have fancied them to go and get maximum points there as well. So it's a real blow. And it sounds like it's going to be a fair amount of time before, you know, it's not as simple as just relaying the pitch. There's obviously fundamental issues there, which is going to mean probably having to play their football elsewhere, which has not been able to be achieved for this weekend. So yeah, a real blow, but obviously in the short term, a wonderful night next Tuesday to look forward to up at St James's, and hopefully it'll get sorted out quickly for them.
Yeah, I Googled it because I thought, this sounds like, is it an oversight? You know, because it's such a major sort of sinkhole, isn't it, on the side of the pitch.
The pitches are absolutely shocking, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, they look like bunkers, don't they? It's crazy. I thought, was there a shortcut in the design of the stadium, or in regards to the the location, was a risk taken? And I found a report from October 2014. A report commissioned by Wimbledon Park Residents Association claims there could be problems with flooding if AFC Wimbledon Stadium plans go ahead. According to the report, it says they cannot see how at present this scheme can overcome and address flooding constraints. In fact, it appears at this stage, the design process, that this scheme will significantly exacerbate flooding in the area. So it's obviously something that was discussed at great length prior to the build. And it's come back to bite them.
Apologies to Johnny Jackson and everybody at AFC Wimbledon for Adrian just invalidating your insurance claim there. All the best.
Oh, dear.
With the revenge.
Don't say that.
I'm joking. I'm sure that they are covered. All right. Look, we are going to have a little chat about some midweek cup action next. But not cup sex. I mean, goodness me, it was pretty straightforward, wasn't it, for everybody except for Leicester City. Well done to Walsall for pushing them all the way to penalties, although the story there was more, I think, about Leicester's inadequacies. But yeah, good effort from Walsall and from Wickham, who ran Aston Villa close. We are recording on Thursday morning. Clark, it's just hours after you watched Bolton crumble at the Emirates Stadium. Arsenal gave him a fighting chance by putting a child in goal, but it didn't matter.
Yeah, unbelievable, really. Yeah, Jack Porter only just turned 16. So, yeah, I mean, there was a big old leg up, but he didn't have really any saves to make. There were two big misses, I've got to say, from Bolton in the first half. Scott Arfield and John McAtee blazed over from close range. Really poor finishes. But, yeah, I was disappointed with Bolton. They tried to play nice football, as is their way, but it didn't offer a great deal. A lot of the goals were self-inflicted, defensive mistakes. Farino made one, trying to flick one around the corner. There was a miss kick from Arfield ahead of the first goal, which, you can't really explain a player his ability. And the last two goals were really scrappy goals that Bolton didn't react to rebounds to. So, yeah, they'll look at the goals and think, we could have stopped those goals. But in general play, they really struggled. The goalkeeper had a bit of a mare, Luke Southwood. The one player that really caught my eye was Aaron Collins. I thought he was brilliant, actually. I would probably give no one above a 6, really, in a Bolton shirt, apart from Collins. I'd give him an 8 or an 8.5. He was tireless, running the channels, scored a brilliant goal, running through, rounded the goalkeeper, and didn't look out of his depth at all. So I think that was a really encouraging night for Collins, but for everybody else, it was a tough one. And he did make 7 changes as well. So the eye or the focus was definitely on the league action.
I told you Aaron Collins was going to be player of the year, and he's done absolutely sod all to this stage of the season. So that's music to my ears. And sorry for my phone just going off. It's the first time my ring has been on since 1994.
Sam, you and I on Tuesday saw Barrow. I mean, they didn't put up much of a fight, truth be told. The game was over inside 20 minutes at Stamford Bridge. We talked about a rookie goalkeeper there. Paul Farman didn't cover himself in glory here. Ended up with a goal and assist, mind you. Were there any positives for you? I thought Kacha Kouyaté, when he came on, actually, you could tell that he'd come from a Premier League academy, because he had the touches, but he also looked confident and out there. But other than that, as Stephen Clement said before, didn't he, we don't want to beat ourselves here. We want to let Chelsea beat us. I think he'd be pretty disappointed that actually some of the goals are preventable.
Yeah. I think you've got to be incredibly balanced, because even though it's Chelsea's second string, if you like, there's still a ridiculous amount of talent there. So it was always going to be a resounding victory, you would suggest, as Arsenal at the Emirates against Bolton was likely to be as well. However, considering this is a League Two side, top of the table, playing really well defensively. I think only Gillingham got more clean sheets. I was disappointed with the defensive setup and changed the shape. And changed the shape considerably. You know, this was a very much a back five. They've been a back four this season. And the pace, the attacking impetus only came when Kouyaté came on late in the day. And I think when you go to these big clubs, and we saw it with Wimbledon last season at Stamford Bridge, Matt, you have to have an outlet. And Stephen Clements went with two technical centre forwards, Akwa, who's good with his back to goal. Jed Garner's a lovely footballer, really good ability. Neither of them can run. So your only outlet from the outset was Newby on the left-hand side, who's playing as a wing-back, and he's a winger. So he's playing further back and essentially playing as a full-back in the five. So I just felt, I get it. Listen, you're going to Stamford Bridge, you're going to Arsenal, you're going to Anfield, you want to be conservative and you want to make it compact and all that, but you've got to be able to get out and get up the pitch. And they couldn't do that because they had no pace. And also, I'd imagine this is a back three, really narrow midfield three that had probably walked through it on the training ground for a morning. And that's what it looked like for 20, 25 minutes. The first couple of goals, they were incredibly disjointed defensively. Nobody knowing who to go and mark, especially the two kind of number 10s. And Nkunku was playing up front, wasn't he? But Nkunku and João Félix rotating and dropping in. It was a bit of a mess early on. So I think on reflection, yeah, I think some of the Carlisle fans would have liked to see Kouyaté from the off and maybe just go with what they've been so far this season. You might lose 5-0, but at least you'd lay a few gloves on the opponent. So yeah, a little bit disappointed, but let's not take away what's been an amazing start to the season for Stephen Clements. And considering they were, what, a point outside the playoffs, got a great chance this season.
A quick one on Walsall. Obviously pushed Leicester close. Well done, David Akagbu, rugby tackling, a pitch invader. Was he going for your mate, Steve Cooper, wasn't he? I think they were
disgraceful.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the Leicester fans have gone too early on Steve Cooper. I think there's every chance he can win them over in the long run. But Walsall, under Matt Sadler, saw them, didn't I, at Birmingham, the EFL Trophy. They've got a really good shape. Very well coached, I think, by Sam's mate, Matt Sadler. Got to get him on the show. He's doing a great job. 12 games in now, Walsall. They've conceded more than one goal once in 12 games. And that was the match you saw against Huddersfield, the 3-2 win. 5 clean sheets, 3 on the spin. Only Wimbledon, and Sam's been talking about how good they are defensively, only Wimbledon have faced fewer shots this season than Walsall in League Two. So yeah, keep your eye on them. I don't think they're going anywhere. I think they're going to be really solid this season.
Shout out to everybody's favourite uncle, Albert Adoma, as well. He made his 700th career appearance in that game. In terms of the draw for, what are we, round four, EFL representation, well, if Wimbledon can get past Newcastle, they'll host Chelsea. That's a pretty big if, though. Preston are taking on Arsenal. Clarke will be all over that one. Southampton versus Stoke. Stoke might well fancy their chances in that. You'd imagine Southampton will rotate heavily. And Brentford host Sheffield Wednesday. So some chance for some EFL representation there too. Wanted to say well done to Steve Bruce. Won 2-0 at his old club Huddersfield in the week in League. 100% league record continues for Bruce at Blackpool. Okay, next today we'll have a look ahead to the weekend's action. And we're going to start with Portsmouth and Sheffield United. They're at opposite ends of the country and the championship table. They'll go at it at Fratton Park on Saturday. The Blades are in the playoff places. Pompey are second from bottom. It is the first time the teams have met since the 2012-13 season. Let's start with Portsmouth as the home side. Sam, without a win, they've lost their last three, but it hasn't stopped John Mousinho and Rich Hughes getting new contracts, which is a good show of faith from Portsmouth and backing for everything that they did last year. And unless we forget, they've had a tricky run of games, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely. It's been a horrendous fixture list. I mean, this is the last, really, with respect to upcoming opponents, but they just need to get through this Sheffield United game, and then they've got some much more favourable-looking fixtures, which sounds quite negative, but I think it's the reality when you think of the problems they've had, especially defensively. But absolutely, the continuity, the achievement of last year should not be forgotten. And I think long-term, they're onto a good thing with John Mousinho. Incredibly impressive. And you look at the performances this season away from home, maybe Leeds apart, where, you know, they probably should have been on the end of a bit of a hiding there. I think they were unfortunate at Middlesbrough and certainly at Burnley, unfortunate. I thought the game plan was really good. They took the game to Burnley. And in that first half, they could have been further in front. I think, you know, they went for it with the setup as well. Right back really pushes on Swanson, and despite, you know, lack of striking options really for John Messino's start of this season, I think the likes of Lang and Paddy Lane are really having a strong influence. And it was probably their departure getting substituted at Turf Moor and not having that real depth in comparison maybe to the top sides, which did for them. But I mean, huge having Regan Paul and McIntyre back, just options at centre half, out and out defenders, you give you an opportunity of keeping a clean sheet. And if they can do that in this game, then there is absolutely an opportunity that this could be their elusive first win. So yeah, no panic for Pompey. I think playing relatively well. Question marks maybe over some of the defending for those goals up at Turf Moor, but I think they can look forward to better days ahead and potentially, you know, a bit of an upset at the weekend.
Yeah, after this, they've got Stoke, Oxford, QPR and Cardiff. But before that, Clarkie, they've got to deal with an in-form Blade side, unbeaten in the league, won their last 3-0. And for all those transfers they made in the summer that we praised, maybe keeping Gustavo Harmer was the best bit of business they did.
Yeah. He was their player of the year last year, Harmer. 4 goals in 6. Yeah, Leeds wanted him, didn't they? Quite badly. And Sheffield United resisted the temptation, and they'll be delighted that they did, because coming in off the left-hand side, he's been easily their best player so far this season. He's such a match winner, Hamer, isn't he? I've liked him ever since I first saw him play for Coventry a few years ago. They're a good team, no doubt about that. Sheffield United, very, very solid. You're probably looking for a little bit more from someone like Callum O'Hare. I noticed he's had 2 shots this season. 2 shots! Callum O'Hare. Unbelievable. They're a little bit reliant on Hamer, who's had 21. Kiefer Moore's had 16. And then you're scraping the barrel. The left-back, Harrison Burrows, is the next on 7. So they need a bit more from some of the other creative players. They need to join in and offer a bit more of a threat. I think in the XG table, they're very much mid-table, Sheffield United. So they do need to create better chances and be less reliant on Harmer. But yeah, in this game, there's a concern over Arblaster, the midfielder. He missed the last match. And if he's missing, it means Sidy Peck will get another go. He's 19 and did all right, I think, against Derby. And he played well against Wrexham in the cup. But
hissed the post, didn't he?
It was, yeah. Sorry, what did you say?
Kissed the post, didn't he?
Kissed the post with a shot or with his mouth?
I don't know where he's going with this. A little peck.
Oh, yeah, very good. Yeah, nice.
I mean, it's not your best sound, but you know, I admire the attempt.
It was sharp.
Too early for Clarkie and I to get on the end of that,
mate,
one.
I've had 4 hours sleep, mate. but yeah, I think the fact that Sidy Peck is the next in line tells you that maybe they're a bit light in central midfield. You know, it's not an experienced player. So yeah, we'll see. But I really like the 11 that Wilder has available. I think how successful they are this season will depend on, you know, how much of that 11, how often that 11 can be put out onto the pitch. So yeah, let's see. It's a challenging game, this one at Pompey.
Just to mark your card, Sam, I have just written down Sidy Peck kiss the post as a potential name for the episode. So don't think that it was totally wasted, that joke. Speaking of pecking, that's something that Swans and Robins do, isn't it? Which is a good way for me to segue into our weekly Is It a Derby feature.
On fire.
Swansea and Bristol City. It's not a derby. They're more than 80 miles apart. They're in different countries. Back-to-back wins for the Swans, Sam. They're within reach of the playoffs. It's taken Luke Williams a minute, but has he implemented his style now?
I think with the ball, yeah, absolutely. I think he'll still want more from the forward players. Sounds strange in the aftermath of 2 really fine victories, but I think some of the new recruits are probably just getting up to speed. Obviously, Cooper and Cullen, 2 homegrown talents, got the finishes the other day at Coventry in that really good win. But Vibotnik is still being, you know, utilised off the bench. I don't think he even got off it the other day. So maybe it's going to take a little bit of time for them to click into gear offensively. The reason I was reticent when you asked me there was because the defensive numbers are really good, which is not something you would have associated with Luke Williams, probably latterly at Notts County and maybe not last year either. So I think only, yeah, Sheffield United and another have conceded fewer, West Bromwich Albion. So they've only conceded 4. So defensively, they're looking really solid. And I think that that's probably a realisation that had to change and that maybe they haven't probably got the ammunition going the other way to really open up and take games to the opponent. And that will come in time. Maybe, you know, when these new recruits get up to speed, and when they can do a little bit more business, because the squad is a little bit light, I would suggest, to be anything better than maybe a season of improvement and consolidation, maybe into that top half. Some players are standing out. I think Vigouroux's been a really good signing. Obviously, Luke had him at Swindon, the goalkeeper. First games in the Championship, and obviously been around a long time, and he was, you know, pivotal in that most recent game. And Franco, I think, given them, you know, much needed steel and an ability in the middle of the pitch, because Grimes has been, you know, such a consistent performer for them. It's good for him to have a bit of a partner in there. So yeah, probably victories over Norwich and Coventry, I wouldn't necessarily associate with a Swansea team for many a year. Grit, hard work, maybe a little bit under Steve Cooper, but I think a really good sign. Don't ask me to predict this one. I'm glad we're not predicting this one, because I just never know with Bristol City or Swansea, I don't think, this season. So I'll probably take the score draw, but it could be absolutely anything.
Similarities, aren't there, Clarkey, with these two, particularly in the dugouts? I think managers who stepped up from lower divisions to take their first job in the Championship, and Liam Manning really needed that win against his old club Oxford last weekend.
He did, yeah, because they'd lost the two away games, hadn't they? 3-0 at Derby and at Blackburn. So they were sort of thumped. And yeah, I still think he's a really good manager, and that they're moving in the right direction. It's just sort of how much of a budget has he got to work with, really. I think that's the issue. I would absolutely stick with Liam Manning if I was Bristol City. But it was a big win against his old club, a comeback win as well, which always feels a little bit better, doesn't it? So yeah, we'll see. I mean, numbers-wise, they look really good. You know, they're one of the best pressing teams in the division. I don't think anyone's won it in the final third more often than Bristol City. Leeds are the only team that have had more shots on target than Bristol City, so they're carving out some decent chances. And they've got Scott Twine, who is right up there in the sort of individual rankings for chances created. I think only Chakfatadze at Watford has made more than Scott Twine, who's sort of coming in off the left to make things happen. So it was a good day the other day. Obviously, Sinclair Armstrong got a bit of confidence. He'll probably keep his place up top. I think, you know, he's one of those, he's got the raw ingredients, and I guess Liam Manning will back himself to iron out the little bits of rawness that he's got about him and turn him into a player. And that's something to look forward to. The other point of interest at Bristol City is they got their Japanese international Yu Hirakawa, who came off the bench and was brilliant, by all accounts, against Oxford. Real fans' favourite all of a sudden. So it'd be interesting to see if he plays at Swansea. So yeah, look, this will be a nice looking football match. No idea who's going to win. I'm guessing, based on Bristol City's away form, that Swansea should be favourites here, but you never quite know.
We shall find out at the weekend. That's the beauty of football. All right, we'll dip into League One next. In League One, we're talking Cobblers as Northampton entertain Mansfield Town. I love the use of the word entertain in this kind of sense. Mm-hmm. It just suggests that Northampton are sort of obliged to do a big song and dance as Mansfield get off the team bus just to welcome. It's probably not going to happen on Saturday. Only 3 points between them ahead of kickoff. Northampton 12th, Mansfield in 8th. Sam, I was looking at this and trying to get a handle on Northampton. So, they won at Huddersfield last week, but then everybody does that. So how much can we read into the Brady Bunch's victory in Yorkshire?
Well, they got some good fortune, that's for sure. Helic scored one of the most tremendous own goals you're likely to see this season. I think the third could possibly have been a foul, Fosu running forward and nudging over one of the defenders and going clean through. But I suppose my takeaway, I mean, it was a brilliant game plan from John Brady. They kind of went quite long, and obviously it paid off, I think, for two of the goals. Fosu made one for McGeehan in the first half and obviously got one himself. So they went over Huddersfield, who tried to close quite aggressively, as they've been doing under Michael Duff. And at the other end, they posed problems. And I'm a big fan of well, that's maybe not the right sentence, but quite often signings pass me by. I mean, nothing could accentuate that more than some of the players at Northampton. I did not know Tyler Roberts was at Northampton, I don't think, until the weekend. I don't think I knew Fosu was there either. So I definitely missed those.
Still too good for Northampton. I know that sounds massively disrespectful, yeah. But
I've always been a big fan of Fosu. He lost his way a little bit, obviously, after the Charlton years, but he popped up at Oxford, didn't he, subsequently? Good player, if you can get him going, absolutely. And now they've got McGee in there as well. Some of the names, Guthrie and Baldwin defensively. I mean, the front four at the weekend, and this is without Hoskins, who's obviously been the revelation late on in his career the last few seasons. Pinnock and Fosu-Henry, either side, And then you've got McGeehan supporting Roberts. I mean, this is you know, a serious looking side in League One. So we'll see how they go. They're not been creating loads. I think second lowest XG so far this season. They'd only scored four before the weekend at Huddersfield, where obviously I've just described they were very fortuitous probably to get three, but not going to take away anything from what was a fine victory. And I think John Brady is a manager that we probably don't talk about often enough, deserves enormous credit for what he's done there. And obviously he's probably in a position now where he's dealing with a better calibre of player, and that's probably really well deserved. So been a bit of a mixed bag, but yeah, that was a fine victory. And again, a team to be reckoned with, because they'll always be strong defensively and they'll always be strong at set pieces. It's just probably getting a little bit more going in the forward direction.
Clarkie, we are unabashed Mansfield admirers on this podcast, come into this game off the back of successive 2-1 victories. They've adapted pretty well, haven't they, to life back in Tier 3?
I think they're doing just fine. Yeah, we like Cluffy, don't we? His teams always entertain you. Both teams have scored in every Mansfield match this season. They'll score, they'll let some in. Sometimes they'll come on the right side of it, sometimes they won't. And, you know, they've got an informed striker, one of the leading scorers in the division, actually, at the moment, in Lee Gregory. I mean, a bit of a sort of swan song, I guess. He switched to a back three for the last game, Cluffy. Put Keanu Backus at right back, who's a very good crosser of the ball. It'd be interesting to see if he sticks with that. But yeah, they're just facing too many shots. Faced 100 already this season, which is the second highest behind Bristol Rovers. So yeah, need to tighten up a little bit, Mansfield, but they're always good fun.
Elsewhere, Barnsley and Stockport square off at Oakwell. This is a Saturday night game. Barnsley recovered from that cup shellacking at Old Trafford to nick a late win at Burton last week. Stockport looking to bounce back, having their quiches handed to them in front of their friends and family by Leighton Orient last week. Leicester spotted fixture, this one, first meeting since the 04-05 season. Big win that for Barnsley, wasn't it, Clarkie? Because Daryl Clark was pretty cross with how things went at Old Trafford, but they start the weekend 3 points off the top two.
Yeah, it was massive, wasn't it? And obviously the way they got it, injury time winner from Stephen Humphreys would have tasted pretty sweet for Barnsley, for Daryl Clark. He's a bit of a character, isn't he, Humphreys? He only joined them late on. He was out of contract, left Wigan, and it didn't have a club, so he's sort of playing catch up a little bit, but quite a good talent, I think. I think it's a decent pickup, really, for Barnsley. He can make things happen. He has some interesting quotes. I don't know if you saw him. He said, I think football's boring now. Everyone's trying to play like Guardiola. He said, flair players are taken out of the game. It's all about systems and pressing and men behind the ball. Football's about moments, and I want to create some moments. So I kind of like his individuality there. He's his own man. And look, if he does get game time ahead of Sam Cosgrove up top, he's got some good players around him. Davis Keylor-Dunn, Luke O'Connell and Adam Phillips. They're really good players, in my opinion, and players that will always score goals and sort of have shots. So, yeah, Barnsley have got the tools, I think, to win this game. They're a good attacking side. They're not possession-based. They're more of a transition team, really, Barnsley. But they've got, on those little breakaways there, they've got some real talent.
Stockport would have wanted a midweek game, wouldn't they, Sam, to try and get that Orient defeat out of their system. It's a long time to sit with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's got the makings of a really good game, this one. Clarkie speaks about the Barnsley midfield there. Completely echo that. And I think Stockport are really strong in that area as well. So that'll be a colossal battle in there. Yeah, they hadn't conceded at home before that, humbling by Orient, but as I spoke about Richie Wellens on last week's pod, you know, he's really good at varying his tactics. I think they got after Stockport, who, in kind of my opinion, one of the teams that can really mix it up, incredibly robust, can score from slinging balls in the box, set pieces, got a centre forward in Wootton that they can hit from deep at times. I think they're trying to play a bit more this season. I think naturally when you go up a division maybe and you get better players and you want to evolve, I think that's probably what's going on under Dave Challoner a little bit. They're just tweaking the style. And I think Leighton Orient, Galbraith in particular, nicked the ball, I think, a couple of times to punish them. So I think they're, changing somewhat, Stockport. But yeah, they've had a brilliant start to the season. And I've been missing a couple of players, Lewis Bate and Mingy. I think Bate came on off the bench the other day. So strong squad, I think. Goals here. Stockport obviously shipped those four the other day. Barnsley, despite their lofty position, conceded 10. So I think they'll share a few in this one at Oakwell.
I saw Lewis Bate absolutely dominate Everton's under-21s in the EFL Trophy last week. Then keep him fit. He is a good player. Briefly on this game in League Two then, Port Vale versus Swindon. It is Vale unbeaten in three after only winning one of their first four. Would suggest that Darren Moore's starting to have an impact, Clarkie?
Yeah, definitely. They've had a good September, haven't they, Port Vale? One at Newport, remember, I think 4-1, wasn't it? Beat Chesterfield at home and then 2-0 down at Accrington Stanley, getting beaten up, basically, getting bullied. And Darren Moore makes some changes. Took off a couple of his sort of flair players, I suppose, if you like. Brilliant name. One of the best names. I know that you love a good name. This kid's on loan from Brighton. I mean, Brighton, I don't know how many players they got out on loan in the EFL. Bonasio Baker Bote. That's a good name, isn't it?
Benny to his mates. I've done him in the under-21s a few weeks. Yeah. Benny Baker Boaty. Definitely.
Yeah, I like it.
Definitely could have been a gangster.
So yeah, he sort of switched it. He took him off at half-time, and Chislett, who scored a few already this year, brought on an extra centre-back in Hennigan just to handle it. And they ended up sort of scrambling a 2-2 draw, so it keeps the run going, you know. So I think in League Two, you need to have sort of two ways of playing, because not every match is going to be a pretty match. You need to be able to handle it physically, and maybe that match taught him a little bit about the type of players he'll need, for different matches this season, Darren Moore. But I think they got a great chance of beating Swindon.
I mean, everybody has, haven't they, Sam? That Newport win, they're only one in nine all comps. Mark Kennedy needs a result here, one might suggest.
I've got fond memories, if I can make it all about me, of this fixture. 3-0 down once upon a time to a very good Port Vale side. Came back last 15, 20 minutes, scored three, we did. 3-3 draw, as we were both hunting down a playoff position. One winning off my nut. So hopefully some similar entertainment this weekend. I'm glad I've got to be brief because, all's not well. Clearly, you know, one winning in seven games. Yeah, there's a little bit of discourse, I would suggest. So they need a victory, they need a performance. Wrapped up the shots last time out against Carlisle, but obviously humbled at home 2-0 after that spanking win over Newport, and everyone's beating Newport currently. They're a little bit down on their luck and their form. Yeah, they're not creating great chances. I think that's the bottom line. They're not looking particularly creative. The ball's going wide. George Cox has got good delivery from one of the flanks. He's been an assist maker so far this season. But I think, the shot count the other day flattered actually the level of chance they've created. The XG was actually under one. So that's where they need to improve. Blatzel's a good player. Got him from Liverpool last season. He's a good player. He's got ability. There's some others. Shimanga has obviously come in, not really got going since he's had his big moves over the last couple of seasons, but got up and running against Newport. So if those guys can start to find a little bit of rhythm, I think I've got optimism that they can improve. But at the moment, they don't look particularly cohesive other than defensively, where Wright's been a bit of a standout, signed from Crawley, and they're looking pretty good. So that's the problem currently. Just need to be better with the ball, create better chances. And hopefully, we're not going to be talking about a manager being under pressure at Swindon this season.
Predictions before we go. Last week, Sam got 3 points. Adrian and I didn't get any. Sam actually got every result correct, but no perfect scores. So that means that he continues to lead the way, Clark.
I'm not sure I did, Matt, but we can have a stewards next week because we haven't got a lot of time. I think I only got one right, but never mind.
You predicted Bristol City to beat Oxford. You said 2-0. It was 2-1. Oh yes, you're right. You only got 2 points because you said that it was going to be a draw between Stockport and Leighton Orient. So yeah, I've miscounted there.
16 plays 8-8. So he's got a good healthy lead, but he can be reeled in, Matt. Just believe in yourself.
All right. Hull v Cardiff then. I'm saying 2-0 to the hosts. What do you think, Clarkie?
I've got that written down right in front of me. I'm going to go for 1-0.
Sam?
3-1.
Adrian, Wigan v Exeter.
One apiece for me.
Sam?
Yeah, that was mine.
Not against the rules to match somebody else's prediction.
0-0.
Okay, I went 0-1 to Exeter in that one. Doncaster v Chesterfield. Sam, what do you think?
Donny Rovers back on the horse. 2-1.
2-1. Adrian?
I had 2-1. Definitely, they'll be glad to be back at home. What am I going to say? Donny?
You can't play tactically at this stage, mate, with that deficit.
3-2.
3-2. Wow. Okay, I went for a Desmond in that one. We shall see who was right and who was wrong. Before we go, of course, I have a tweet. You've probably seen this one, listener. It came from Andreas Weimann after Blackburn's last game. He said, not at our best today, but we take the point away from home to continue the unbeaten run. Thanks to the travelling fans for the amazing support. Flames emoji, two pictures of him in action. 4.7k likes for that, 957 for the reply where he's corrected unbeaten to unbeaten. Big Al says unbeaten. That's class. What do you think, Clarky?
No, loved it. Yeah, absolutely loved it. It was the perfect word, wasn't it? After after what happened in the game. So
yes. So you think that he's done it on purpose because of the whole bite thing?
Yeah. I absolutely do. And that, I think he's trying to style it out because maybe someone's tapped him on the shoulder and said, oh, look, don't fan the flames or whatever. But I think it was genius, right?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Some people getting involved in the replies, like John Sam, who says fangs to the travelling fans. Quite enjoyed that.
I can't believe you've just wasted 30 seconds of your breath there discussing if he meant it. Of course he did. And I would agree that the second one is even better. So, yeah, well played.
Tweet of the season, potentially, this, I'd suggest. Never mind tweet of the week.
Yeah, if he's the first to get there, because I'm sure that this has been churned out by a few different people, this little gag. If he's the first to get there, yeah, he's sharp off the mark.
What does Osmaić get? What's he get, Osmaić?
I don't know what the precedent is, but it's going to be a lengthy ban, you would imagine.
Suarez got 10, didn't he?
Yeah. Did he? Yeah, probably not going to play for a while. Try and enjoy posts like this, guys. Don't be like Bert Nash, who says, most effective thing you've done all day. Just a bit of fun, that's all. You can follow us on social media at EFL What They're On X, at What The EFL, everywhere else. If you would like to, you can take advantage of the offer from our partners at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins for new customers at sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotion/sports-up-2-50. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. I'll put the link to that offer code in the description of the pod. You can also check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and run the National Gambling Helpline. That is going to do us for today. Thanks to Sam and to Adrian and to you. Back with another show next week. Bye for now.